chemical hazard and safer alternative information. And we hope that through this webinar, we'll be able to engage with all of you and get your best ideas and experience for how we can make ChemHat better and better and better. So I hope all of you have on your screen the first slide that's called Trying ChemHat On. And we've kept you all in listen-only mode as we go through this presentation. We've put together these slides with the hope that we can provide you an overview and have lots of times for questions and answers. But since we have over 100 people registered for the call, we're going to do the Q&A by asking people to write a question. You can see on your screen where you can write a question, and we'll then go through all of the questions and try to get as many answers as we can on this call. We also are going to do a couple of polls during the call. And so if you can look where you can raise your hand and answer the questions, we'll be explaining that as we go through the call. So next slide, please. Whoops. So this is the way we've organized the agenda. We're going to talk about the history of ChemHat and then how it works, and then the experience of people training with ChemHat, and then where we hope to go from here, and then leave lots of time for how you can help and questions and answers. And with that, I want to turn it over to Anna Fendley from the United Steelworkers Health, Safety, and Environment Department to take us through the history of ChemHat.
Great. Thank you, Charlotte. So my name is Anna Fendley, as your screen should say. I'm from the Steelworkers Health, Safety, and Environment Department. And can I have the next slide, please?
She's asking you for the next slide.
I'm talking a bit about the history of ChemHat and how we got to where we are today. And for those of you who are not familiar with the Blue-Green Alliance, I'll just start by saying that it's a strategic partnership between labor unions and environmental groups that was founded by the steelworkers and the Sierra Club, and it was founded to expand the number of good jobs in the green economy. And it's now expanded to 14 partners, which you can see on the screen. Next slide. So my job today is to talk a little bit about the history of ChemHat. And last fall, we were discussing how we could build a conversation among workers about using safer chemicals. Can we go back one? And in order to do that, we realized that we needed to look at where workers learn about chemicals and what chemical resources they use. So we talked to workers and we attended trainings offered by their unions and some employers. And at these trainings, we took a look at all the resources that workers were taught to use. Next slide. One of those resources was material safety data sheets, and many of you on the call here are familiar with the limitations of those. They don't always answer the questions that we have. Many have undeclared chemicals, and there are some studies that show that more than half of the MSDSs out there have incorrect data on them. Next slide. So workers were also taught to use the NIOSH Pocket Guide. And I'll just note that we have a number of examples on here, and they're all for ethylene oxide. So next slide. Workers were using ToxTown from the National Library of Medicine. Have the next slide. They were taught to use the EPA website. Kind of the next slide. They used the National Toxicology Program from NIH, from the National Institutes of Health. May I have the next slide? Many workers looked up information from OSHA. This is just one example of OSHA's fact sheets. They use HAZMAT from the National Library of Medicine, which was built for health and safety professionals. And the next slide, please. And many workers also look at the New Jersey fact sheets. So when we talked to workers about these resources, they said a few things. One is that they felt like the resources were very technical. They had trouble understanding them. They couldn't find the answers to the questions that they had. And also that not all of these resources have the same information. And those inconsistencies raised more questions about where they needed to look for which information. So now we're going to do a raise your hand. So you all should have a button on your dashboard that has a little hand on it with an up arrow. And so I just want to ask everyone on the call to raise your hand if you've ever been confused by any of these chemical resources. So I'll give you a couple minutes. Great. So of the 57 people on the call here right now, looks like over half of you have raised your hand that you've had trouble. You've been confused with these resources. So thank you for your participation there. So we realized at this point that workers couldn't have a conversation about safer chemicals without fully understanding the problems with the chemicals they're using. So we recruited a focus group of workers who are IUE CWA members to talk about these and other resources for workers. So up on your screen, you can see we showed them Good Guide, which some of you may be familiar with. It was built for consumers. And can I have the next slide, please? So this one is Plum, which was developed by UC Berkeley. It's another similar resource for chemical and hazard information. And we showed them a few other resources. And at that focus group, we got the same response from workers, that these resources were too technical and they couldn't find the answers that they were looking for. So originally we had no intention of building a new website, but we realized that we had to create something that workers would use and understand and that was publicly accessible without a cost to workers to access. May I have the next slide? So we got workers from a variety of industries together at trainings and conferences. We asked them the question that you have on your screen. It says your health and safety committee has decided to convince your company to switch from using a dangerous chemical to a safer alternative. What information would you need to help you get your employer to switch to a safer chemical? So most of the workers who we talked to were members of the Steelworkers, the Communications Workers of America, the IUE CWA, and the Auto Workers Unions. We also talked to workers at who are trainers at a trainers exchange held by the National Institute for Environmental Health Sciences Worker Education and Training Program. We took their feedback and we did some development, and then we got more feedback and did more development. And overall, it took about 9 months to get to the ChemHat you see today. Can we have the next slide, please? And I just want to add that this truly is a tool designed for workers by workers. Those who provided feedback and helped with the design are credited on the portion of the site titled Who Made ChemHat? And you can look at that list when you visit the site. So with that, I'm going to turn it over to Anne Blake.
Thank you, Anna. So Jen, do you have control over the slides, it sounds like? I guess so. Hello, everyone. My job today is to tell you how Anna has set up how ChemHat was designed by workers, and this is how we went ahead and implemented those user requirements and turned it into a website that we hope meets some of the needs that were not being met by existing materials on hazards and chemicals. So how did we build ChemHat? And I'll also walk through ChemHat so that you get a chance to look at it and see why we designed it the way we did. So on this slide that's up now, as we said, workers provided the user requirements in the way that Anna described. What they wanted was it to be simple, searchable, and clear, and have a quick summary, easy to read, with icons, for example, of impacts, common uses, and exposure pathways. I also wanted to know what the worst hazards were for any chemical that they were working with and they would look up, and alternative information. And as we'll talk about a little later when we talk about what we want ChemHat to be, alternative information or information on safer alternatives is a little scarce still, and that's where we would like to ask your help in helping build that. But we did build in a space for that, and the goal of ChemHat is to provide information not only on hazards but also on alternatives. Then we started looking at existing tools and resources for hazard data, which Anna has showed you a little bit. The three that we looked at, two that we looked at most closely, were PLUM, which is the Public Library of Materials, created by UC Berkeley Center for Green Chemistry, a chemical hazards database. Basically, these are all the authoritative lists of information on hazards from governments, from research groups, and occasionally from nonprofits as well that have pulled information together on hazards and made it publicly available. A lot of us working in chemical data management have had access to these, but in proprietary ways. For example, when we built GoodGuide, we put all those same lists together, but they're a little hard to get to from the GoodGuide website. So the goal of PLUM was to have that information publicly available. Pharos is a tool built by the Healthy Building Network, and the goal of that is to provide information on hazards on chemicals and materials in the building industry. But they, again, have used all the same basic hazard data that we all have access to from authoritative lists. And they were willing to make that available to us. And one of the reasons we selected Pharos over PLUM for the hazard information is that one of the things that Pharos does is that it has built in the green screen for safer chemicals. This is a screen that covers some 22 health and environmental endpoints. And has an inbuilt decision logic whereby the goal of the green screen for safer chemicals is to classify the worst of the worst and then move everyone towards safer chemistries. And one of the big screens is if, for example, you have a chemical that is a persistent bioaccumulative or toxic chemical and it meets certain high-end health endpoints, human health endpoints, then it becomes what's known as a benchmark one chemical. And that screen is built into Pharos. So you will see some of that in the search results in ChemHat. Other examples, we also looked at other examples for presenting chemical data to consumers. That's where most of the work has been done so far. One is GoodGuide, which ranks consumer products on three sets of criteria, health, consumer products and companies, on health criteria, environmental criteria, and social responsibility criteria. And that has a quick icon representation that we took some inspiration from. EWG's Skin Deep Cosmetics database has information on individual chemicals for personal care products, and what that provides also is the ability to go to the original source data if you're interested in that, and we took some of that inspiration as well. And finally, the Ecology Center in Ann Arbor, Michigan, healthystuff.org, has provided information on hazards on things such as toys and cars and various other consumer products. Next slide, please. So this is just a quick example of what Pharos's chemical and material library look like. And you'll see, unfortunately, this is not particularly easy to read. But you'll see on the far left, you'll see these color-coded icons, the boxes that say eye irritation, flammable, neurotoxicity, and so forth. And we'll see, you'll see shortly how we translated that information into ChemHat in a slightly more readable form. On the right, in the blue lettering, you see the original source of information within Pharos. So that's a plug for Pharos if you're working in the building industry, and also with great thanks to them, we would not have been able to build ChemHat without the hazard information that they have organized. Next slide, please. So what we'll do next is walk you through ChemHat itself. So here's what ChemHat looks like. Here's the search page. We set it up to be fairly simple. Here's all the folks that helped design it down at the bottom, and you can look at that in some detail. So the goal for this, because this is targeted to workers and not your average consumer, we went on the assumption that a worker would have access at least to a chemical name or synonym and a CAS number. We're going to add a little note here based on some of the feedback we've received already that you actually have to enter the dashes in the CAS number in order to search for the chemical. So you type in your chemical or CAS number here and you go on to, you get your results page. Next slide, please. And this is, again, our dear friend ethylene oxide. So there are several pieces that we want to tell you about here. First off, the priority of the way the results come back. One is, first, how can this chemical affect my health? And we've split this up into acute short-term effects and chronic long-term effects. And you'll see a series of icons here in different colors and descriptions accompanying each of those icons talking about the health endpoint that this, where this impact is happening. So, and notice also we've had some feedback initially on searches here that we will add a little more explanation about the color coding. The goal behind this was that the highest hazard would be the one reflected in the icon. So under chronic effects of ethylene oxide, for example, you see red under causes cancer. And that means that we have the strongest data supporting the fact that it is a human carcinogen. So at the same with birth defects and affecting the reproductive system. The yellow in the icons and the acute short-term effects indicate that there is a lesser effect, or we have less support for that information. And we've added here a little icon for how do we know, and this is echoing the EWG Consumer Safe Cosmetics Database. When you click on how we know, how do we know, you go, next slide please, you get a little pull-down menu that tells you what the data sources are. So this is coming straight from Pharos. It says, here's the icon that we created to show information that workers said that they wanted. What's the worst possible hazard of this chemical? What kind of health impact does it cause? And here, if you're really interested in where that information comes from or what's supporting that little icon, here's where you can get that information. Next slide, please. So if you scroll down on your results page, you also see some inherent hazards. We included these flammability. And we've also included a restricted list. If there is a government, or usually a government, that says that they have restricted this particular chemical for some reason, you'll get that information as well. And again, you have the how do we know that you can click to. The other thing I'd like to emphasize about this page is that we rearranged this so that usually when you get hazard information on a chemical, you get here's how it can harm you and here's how you can protect yourself from it. What we wanted to do was reflect the hierarchy of controls. And in which substitution is the top. So we put in here space for what safer alternatives are available for this chemical. And Charlotte will be talking a little later about what our hopes are for the next step of ChemHAT and how we can pull safer alternatives information in here. And I would like to add my plea here that if you have information on safer alternatives in particular workplaces for particular chemicals, we really want to hear about them. The next few pieces of the search page, we're very much at the bottom of the search page now, is how am I likely to be exposed to this chemical. We don't have this here for ethylene oxide, but we do want to be adding exposure pathways. We do have information in the icons for that. How can I protect myself? This is our standard PPE information. And way down at the bottom, we also have how does this have an environmental impact, if this chemical has an environmental impact. Next slide, please. So with this slide, I just wanted to emphasize we will be adding this with a text code to the website shortly. This is the way we set up our icon color coding. As you see on the far left in each block, you see the health endpoint, gene mutation, PBT, organ toxicant, eye irritation, and flammability, so an inherent hazard as well. And what you see here is when the icon is gray, and we will explain this further, when it's gray, we have either no information or there's equivocal information on this, not very strong information about the impact for this chemical. And the code goes up to, you know, moderate hazard, mild hazard, moderate hazard, and extreme hazard in each case. So next slide, please. Finally, we've had some questions about why we didn't take the GHS icon. And I put the GHS icons up here, partly the main reason that we wanted different icons for ChemHAT is that the concerns that were brought to us by workers who gave us the user requirements was that we wanted specificity on the health endpoints. So that's why we created more specificity beyond the skull and crossbones and the human with the impact in the chest. As you notice, many of the other GHS icons are inherent hazards, such as corrosivity and so forth. So again, we just wanted more specificity on the human health endpoints. We did, however, if you go in and look for a chemical that has environmental impacts, our amazing designers of icons also took the GHS environmental icon here with the dead tree and the dead fish and split that into two icons so that we now have under environmental, you'll see if something has an impact on aquatic ecosystems, the dead fish, or a terrestrial ecosystem. So that's an introduction to ChemHat. We hope that you'll play around with it and give us feedback on what could be improved. And we look forward to your comments. And now I'm going to hand it off to Michael and some others to talk about how we've used ChemHat in training. Thank you.
Let me just say that we've opened up a poll question for all of you to answer that asks about your, I see 51% of you are answering. So the question is, do you have direct contact with rank and file workers? And we'll let you answer that question while Michael begins his presentation. Michael? We're not hearing Michael.
It seems like Michael's having problems getting on the phone. So my name is Mark McDonald. I'm with the USW and Tony Masaki Center. We're planning on using this site in our training as an informational tool that is worker-friendly, as you can see as we go through this. It's easy to use. And the unique part of it is that it does give those safer alternatives. So granted, there's a small amount of them now, but we're hoping that this program and the site is going to develop more and more. And it actually shows you how to start that procedure and help to help you to get that safer alternative for it through the through the systems of safety or the hierarchy of control. So the great thing about it is that this site is really just still developing, but it's also developing to the needs of the workers and the people that are using it. So hopefully down the line it'll become a really great program, definitely worker friendly, and will meet all the needs of the workers and the people using it. Ernie?
Hello. Hey, this is Ernie. Sorry, a little bit of technical difficulties there. I am with CWA District 9, which is the district for California, Nevada, and Hawaii, and we have had the honor and the pleasure of playing with ChemHat for the past year as it was under beta and after it went live, and to have some great training by Charlotte and Ann Blake with some of our guys. We've had 4 trainings so far in California. We've had a Berkeley, Sacramento, LA, Modesto training. We brought about 85 of our guys through and about a dozen guests from environmental and environmental justice organizations, which was interesting and very positive. I want to share with you my thoughts about ChemHat before we started using it and how it was going to be perceived by our guys. I have to admit I had some misgivings. While I was all in, I myself am a big safety guy and an environmentalist, and I see the value of ChemHat and the whole green chemistry movement. There is a lot going on with our people that I wasn't sure whether or not it was going to be appreciated. I attended the 2 shakeout trainings in Pittsburgh that was made up for ChemHat, and the training that was made mostly of USW workers and guys that work mostly at refineries and chemical plants, paper mills, places like that, you know, places where there's 10,000 gallon tanks of chemicals with skull and crossbones painted on the side. With those guys, they got it immediately. If they didn't already get it before they walked in the room, the value of something like ChemHat. Our guys is different. Most of our guys are telecom guys. And most of the guys that we're going to have at the training are going to be AT&T employees. And while we use chemicals every day, our exposures come from, a couple dozen cans and spray bottles and jugs and compounds that we use, you know. So it's not quite as in-your-face, obvious exposures that we're getting. Part of the concern that I had bringing our guys into the training was that in District 9 right now, we are involved in a couple different major battles. We're currently in bargaining with AT&T, who's an employer who's become just about intolerable, created an intolerable workplace in the past couple of years. We've been fighting a bill going through the California legislature, which has now made it through the legislature, SB 1161, which is a American Legislative Exchange Council bill that would deregulate a lot of the work we would do, and without even the minimal PUC regulation on a lot of our work, it will probably be a huge hammer blow if the governor signs it to our guys in the future. And of course, there's the elections, and in California we have a horrible Prop 32, which is kind of an Armageddon bill for all the unions in California. So with all of that, I must admit I was really unsure of our guys would understand why we're dealing with this now or at all. What I found was that by the end of the 4-hour training that we did, and you don't need to do 4-hour training to use ChemHat, our guys were all in. You know, some of our guys came in with a little bit of skepticism or aloofness, but by the end of the training, we had the most exuberant indignation with the understanding of the almost complete lack of real chemical regulation, the huge data gap about what our exposures actually are and what the effects on our people and our families and the environment are, and they loved ChemHat. For the first three trainings, ChemHat was in beta mode, and so we were given a lot of feedback. At the last training, ChemHat was live, and we spent quite a bit of time actually using real-world examples of products that our guys work with, like you can see on the slide, some of that stuff. And surprise, surprise, finding out that the anemic MSDS sheets that we get and the assumption that this stuff must be relatively safe was a real eye-opener for our guys, and they left the training determined and eager to spread the word about ChemHat back on their crews and through their safety councils, and very eager to be part of the solution moving forward. And so I would say to anybody here who represents an organization where you're thinking about, is this ChemHat tool something that I should bring to my guys, not sure if it is, or maybe, you know, right now is not the right time, we've got a lot of other things going on, I would say that our experience has been this is a strong tool that once your people get to play around with it and see the kind of exposures they're getting or have a better understanding of the exposures they're getting from their everyday work materials, it's going to be a really positive tool and a strong tool that you can use moving forward to clean up your workplace. And with that, I guess I will hand it on to either Mike or Charlotte, whoever's coming next.
Right. Let's see if we can go back to Michael's slides. And Michael, if you can talk now and we can hear you. Apologies to everybody for our ham-handed effort to make this all work elegantly. Michael, are you there? No. Well, let me start. And Michael, if you can figure out what the problem is, just talk right over me whenever you can. So if we go to Michael's first slide. So this just explains where on the ChemHat website you can find many of the training materials that Ernie talked about. And what we've done is to take both the slides that we've used in these trainings and the fact sheets that we use to do small group exercises and to make them available to all of you. And we'd love to have the materials that you're using in training to also be able to post on this website with proper acknowledgement that they come from you, to be able to really create a shared space for this kind of information. Mark, is there anything more that you'd want to add?
Only the fact that, like, I want to reemphasize the fact that this is in development, and it seems that as our needs come up, that we're going to try and address them as much as possible. Just going through the site itself, if anybody's been through it or is soon to go on it, it is very user-friendly. You don't have to be a chemist or a scientist to go through it, and the explanations are very easily understood. It does include a case number. If you don't have a case number, it will add it to it once you put the name in there, so then you can do further research on it as well. But the safer alternatives is really the unique part of this site. The fact that they are now developing it. If they don't have it, they do have a way that you can be shown how to use it. So I think that really is something that's been needed for a long time, and I'm glad to see that they are approaching it from that direction. And that's about it, Charlotte.
Thanks so much, Mark. So if we could go to the next slide, let me just ask Michael one more time if you're there and have anything to add. Okay. We're going to have a second poll question now. If you could answer that, and I'll start my presentation. So we want to talk some about the future of ChemHat, and to talk about what we believe should be first up in the next steps for ChemHat, and talked about the tweaking that we know we have to do based on so many of your questions and comments, that we have a lot to do with synonyms. We have to do a better job of clarifying what the different colors mean and how those are tied to the strength of the evidence. And we have to figure out how to get people to put in the hyphens only when the hyphens are supposed to go in CAS numbers. But then once we do that kind of tweaking, what we think the next big piece is to figure out how to populate the part of the website that's meant to help us move towards safer alternatives. And our first step is to really look at Subsport, the new European Union database that has case studies that we hope to import into ChemHat in the near future. The way that the case story database was created was really very similar to what we're asking from all of you, that we need to be able to find a way to meticulously share these stories publicly so that other people can use them, and to be able to sort what we know about safer alternatives, and also what we know about unfortunate efforts to try to find safer alternatives that failed, and to tell each other those stories to be able to move from dangerous chemicals to safer alternatives. One of the things that we want to figure out how to do in the near term is how to aggregate both chemicals of concern and safer alternatives the same way Subsport does it, so that you can see what there is to know about your sector or other sectors that you might be interested in. Next slide. And I just put one of these case studies on here for those of you who haven't played around with Subsport, that they do a really good job of talking about the substituted substance, what the alternatives were, and then asking the very important question that was the solution implemented and is it in use, or was this just a theory that never turned into practice? This is a story about printing on plastic bags. It tells the story. It explains how it came to be, and we hope to have that kind of detail in what we're doing on ChemHat. Next slide. Similarly, we want to move quickly to importing all of the information that you would find on an MSDS sheet, soon to become an SDS sheet, under the new HAZCOM OSHA standards, and to make sure that when we talk about a chemical, we find a way to tell you what you need to know about its flammability and other important information. And with that, what we really want to do is open it up to all of you. So if you go to the question section of the panel that's on your screen, we're going to start answering these questions. So, Anne, do you want to just pick up and begin this effort?
Certainly. I think the most common question I'm seeing is if the slides will be available. And I assume so, Charlotte. Is that the case?
The answer to that is yes.
Yes, I figured as much. I'm trying to, sorry, I'm new to the question format here, so let me.
The second question is about products versus chemical components.
Correct. We do not currently have product information in ChemHAS. One of the main challenges of having a product-based database is that the products change really very quickly. Pharos does have products for the building industry. I think that's a slightly more stable batch of information. So no, we do not currently have products. There's a related question later on about if the chemical appears in different products, can we does ChemHAT include different routes of exposure? I think we would include all possible routes of exposure if we had information on that to answer that question. Charlotte?
Great. I thought it would be also important to talk more about the questions that are coming up that ask about that alternatives need to be products, not just drop-in chemicals, and
sure.
How we...
Did you want to start with that?
Yeah. Well, just go ahead.
Okay. So the main goal of this is to provide information about the worst hazards on the chemical front. But yes, those obviously need to be factored into the fact that that chemicals appear in products. And one of the questions I believe that's been asked is the trade-off issue. How do you... And also that the product that has an alternative, a safer alternative chemical in it, might not work as well. So we have worked with, first off, that's not necessarily true. We've done a lot of product substitutions in different areas where the product does work better with a safer alternative. But absolutely, when you're doing an assessment of an alternative product, a product with a safer alternative chemical in it, that the product should be tried for the application that you're using. So for example, I've done product trials with different groups of people, and we've had to tweak it so that we have a different alternative product that works for the particular application, like a public utility worker. So it's not easy to figure out the trade-off issue and to capture it in something like a web-based tool, but ChemHAT does provide you all the information, so if you're looking at two different chemicals, you can pick the safer one, and you will have all the information. Eventually, if we don't have it now, we will have at least the human health impacts. You'll also get the inherent hazard information, and you can at least have a summary of the information to show what the trade-offs, where the trade-offs might be. So perhaps you pick something that's less of a carcinogen but may have a greater flammability or something like that. So you will be able to see that with the summary information presented in ChemHAT. Is there another question you wanted me to answer, Charlotte? I'm looking quickly. See if I can read these. There was a question about conflicting information. How would ChemHAT deal with conflicting and different information? We've decided, along with Pharos, to go with the precautionary route, that the highest hazard is what's shown first. So if you have conflicting sources of information, let's say formaldehyde on its level of carcinogenicity, you will be able to go to the how do we know and get the IARC classification first, and then you'll get the various other folks that may be classifying it differently. So the highest hazard.
Yeah. Great. Anna, could you address the question of do we think this will confuse people with GHS?
Sure. Well, I think that Anne gave a very good explanation of why we chose to expand on the icons as opposed to just use the GHS icons, because when we talked to workers, they really wanted that human health information, and not just that it was a human health hazard, but that it would it could cause respiratory problems, or it could cause skin problems, or cause cancer. So we really don't think that workers are going to get confused in this case. The safety data sheets under GHS will have the GHS icons on them, but we're hoping that this is a resource that workers will go to go more in depth than just those two GHS human health icons.
Great, thank you. There's a question about, will ChemHack give the green screen benchmark score for a chemical and allow comparisons?
We haven't designed it to show that directly, but we could if that's something that people are interested in, because that is built into the information that we get from Theros.
And there's another question about, most people don't know either the chemical name or the CAS number. So how will, are there going to be basic instructions for how to find that?
We'll definitely consider that. We're already thinking of adding a little more instruction to the search page. So we do have information there, and perhaps we can add, this is where you go to find a CAS number or a chemical name. Thank you for that feedback.
Yeah. And there's a question about needing more clarity on the icon colors, that they combine two concepts, but the level of hazard and the level of evidence are different.
Yes, and I realize I didn't explain that clearly. We will be adding more detail on that color code. Basically, right now, this, in some cases, as in carcinogenicity, the color code refers to the strengths of the impact, which is tied to the strength of the evidence, so that, and you know, if you become an IARC-2A, it's forgive me if I get this wrong while being on the spot here, it's animal data. If you get one, it's clear human data. So that's what's reflected in the carcinogenicity endpoint. But it may be different, and it's a different kind of strength of evidence for a different endpoint. So we're going to add a little more information. I hope that doesn't muddy the waters. We'll add more information on the website as to what the color code means and try to separate those two, the strength of evidence and the hazard, where appropriate.
There's a question about whether we would consider having a compare feature similar to how some consumer product websites allow consumers to compare models. Who wants to take that one?
Why don't you take that one, Charlotte?
I don't have an answer to that. I think that once we get through the effort of gathering all of the case studies, where we have a variety of case studies where people have, for example, looked at safer inks, we could create some kind of an effort to compare similar alternative analyses and put them side by side, but we need to really build a field of case studies for safer alternatives held in a public way to be able to do that kind of side by side comparison.
That's true, and also as you were talking, I realized that most of those consumer sites, such as Good Guide and EWG, allow you to do the compare feature for products, and we don't have that capacity to have the product information yet. I don't know if we will or if that will be part of what we do next, but definitely we need more information on safer alternatives before we can start thinking about a comparison feature. But thank you for the feedback. We'll definitely see if we can work that into the next stage.
Yeah. Let's send out the other poll question. And in the meantime, there's a question about how we intend to link to the subsport case studies.
We're still working on that. I think the suggestion was to have direct links to the case studies. We'll see if that's possible. The interesting piece of subsport that I want to work on, which we had originally thought for ChemHat, was to be able to search by workplace. And they've taken in the European descriptions from the European Chemicals Agency of 20-some work processes. And we'll see if we can bring that in as a feature, and that might help narrow down the search a little bit as well.
I'm seeing if there are any questions here that we haven't answered and want to look through these and at the same time encourage all of you who still have a question to post it. There's a question from Melissa McCaffrey about is it the intent of ChemHat to be the first reference for employees when trying to find safety information, to look at ChemHat before searching in MSDS? Anna, do you want to take that?
Go ahead, Anna.
Sure, this is Anna. I'll answer that as best I can. This is a resource that we think that workers will be able to use and understand. You know, employers are still required to have MSDS available. That may be where a worker would go to get the chemical name or the CAS number to search. But in my work, direct work with workers, when I ask the question if they've looked at the MSDS sheet, the answer I get back is, well, I tried, but I couldn't find what I was looking for. So, you know, the order of what they go to first is up in the air, but I think that this will be a resource that workers will find more useful and more easily understood than an MSDS.
I would echo that, and I would say that I think this is intended to be a supplement and an easier lookup, a quick lookup for hazards in addition to an MSDS.
I think that's right, and I think one way that it will work with GHS is that if you see that there is an acute or a chronic health hazard on your SDS sheet, you can get more information about the particular nature of that hazard by going to ChemHat. There's a question about whether the system will be compliant with the new OSHA HAZCOM standard. Anna?
Sure. I mean, this does not, this is not a substitution for an employer's responsibility to have the information available on the worksite. This is a resource for workers to be able to understand what they're working with and look for safer alternatives.
Great. So we've just posted the fourth and final poll question, and our assumption is that the next important thing for us to populate on ChemHat is the safer alternatives information that does exist, but we are interested in challenging that assumption by asking all of you what you think we should be focused on next. And while you're answering that question, we're also being asked if the system would be used in place of SDSs and providing information to emergency responders. Who wants to answer that question?
This is Anne. I don't think that was the intent. It was an intent for workers to know what they're exposed to in the workplace and if there are safer alternatives. Anna, did you want to take that one on?
I would agree that was not the intent. You know, also each site has its own specific emergency response needs, and this is a very broad database. So each site would need to provide their information to emergency responders.
Right. And I would just add to that we mean for ChemHat to add value to the existing resources, not to subsume all of them. And that it would be our hope that in the future people would not only use ChemHat along with all the other sites that we've talked about and many that we haven't, but also that in time ChemHat's utility is adopted by some of the other tools that are out there, and we all figure out how to provide better, smarter, more useful information in a way that people can actually use.
Along that line, there's a couple of
please.
Questions. Sorry, did you want to go somewhere
go
else?
Go ahead.
There are a couple
no,
of questions
go ahead.
here about, is there information on the site regarding how workers can encourage their employers to move towards safer alternatives? Yes, there is. Anna, did you want to address that?
Sure. We have a section on the site. You can see it in the navigation bar from the homepage. That's for workers, that talks a bit about workers' rights and what workers need to know about chemicals and accessing chemical information in their workplace. But you know, we're always open to suggestions if you think that there's something, a particular topic or resource that we don't have there that would be useful for workers.
Great. Anything else that any of the presenters want to say before we close this up?
This is Anna again. I see that there's another question about handheld devices, and I just wanted to mention, because I don't think we have yet, that there is a mobile version for this site that can be accessed on a smartphone or a handheld device. It's just the same chemhat.org that can be accessed from your browser. So it is enabled for the mobile sites so that it can be viewed that way as well.
Yes, thank you. I was going to respond to that question. I think there's one last question. Are we going to interact with the U.S. National Library of Medicine about this? And yes, I believe Charlotte is talking to the National Library of Medicine, and we appreciate the input and the other suggestions of potential resources for ChemHat are most welcome.
Great. And with that, let me thank all of the presenters on today's call, and to thank all of you for joining us. You can find all through ChemHat ways to interact with us. We really encourage you to do this. We would have never gone on the quest to build ChemHat if we didn't want to find better, smarter, more useful ways of getting this information into the hands of workers. And any ideas you have for more, better, smarter ways to be able to make this information available, we want to hear them and work with you to make them available to more people. So thanks to everybody. Please stay in touch. All ideas, comments, criticisms welcome. And we look forward to the growth of ChemHat with all of your participation. Thanks again.